strong families do things together. They genuinely enjoy their time together. And the time they spend together is not always fun. Sometimes it's working, doing chores together, doing work together. Those are great ways to spend your time together. But strong families make an effort to spend a lot of time together. Third was commitment. Commitment is trusting, respecting, accepting, putting your family first in terms of time and energy. Members of a strong family are dedicated to the family as a unit, but also to the well-being of each individual. Those are the three that we talked about yesterday. Today we're going to talk about three more. I want to start with appreciation and affection. By the way, if I'm rushing a little bit, forgive me. Each of these would warrant about four class lessons, each characteristic would. So we're looking at about 24 lessons, 6 months of Sunday school lessons, if you wanted to look at those and really get deeply into them. So I'm having to kind of rush through, and there's a lot more that could be said, a lot more applications which could be made. Appreciation and affection. Strong families deeply care for one another. Sometimes it's genuine love, and sometimes you don't love them so much, and sometimes you don't even like them, but you still care for them. It's still part of your family. But there's appreciation for other people, and there's affection. Strong families let other family members know that on a regular basis. They let other family members know how much they're appreciated and how much love they have for them. And strong families, they're not afraid to express their love. Now, my family, growing up as a boy, there wasn't a whole lot of expression of love in verbal form. There was in a lot of other forms. And I knew I was loved by my dad. Never told me that, but I knew it. Those of you who know Daddy would know that he was not one to go around saying it. He told Mama, I told you I loved you when we got married, and if anything changes, I'll let you know. That's not the way you should go about doing it, but that was Daddy's way, okay? But Daddy showed me that he loved me in many, many other ways, and I'd rather have those actions than just hollow words. Sometimes it's good to have words, too, but the actions mean more than the words do. Families that appreciate each other share a lot of positive emotional feelings. They're nice to each other, and sometimes niceness is shown in different ways. Some people outside may not know that they're being nice to each other, but they really are, in their own little family language there. Now, families are strengthened. Well, it's kind of funny because strong families have appreciation and affection, but appreciation and affection strengthen families even more. And so I want to encourage us today to look at our families. Are we accenting the positive? Members of strong families, they encourage each other. They support each other within the family. They notice positive behavior. They notice positive aspects of other people. They pay attention to manners. They notice when somebody does something nice. They notice the characteristics that make other people unique. And they tell them, maybe with a note, maybe just with a word, whatever. But they accent the positive. One other thing I want to mention as we go through this, I want us to, and I'm going to wrap up talking about our family of faith. How are we doing in our congregations, in our family of faith, how are we doing in these areas? And I think that the church could be much stronger, could be much more enthusiastic, could be much more dedicated if we recognize these family strengths, and talking about our physical families, recognize that they also apply to our faith families. And if we could accent these strengths within our congregation, I think it would be a big boost for most congregations. Many may already be doing that. Some people show appreciation by writing just a short note. Maybe a love note, if you want to call it that. But for your children, did great on the test last week. Take a little post-it note, write down, great job on the test, or you know, whatever, really proud of you. And it's better not to praise your children for their accomplishment. It's better to praise them for the effort that they put in, for the work that they did in order to achieve that. And let them know that you're really proud of how hard they work. This kind of thing. A little short note. Put it in the backpack. Got a lunch bag. Stick it in there. Don't tell them you did it. And they get to school and they find it. And it'll be something really special. Husband and wife. Preachers put notes in my briefcase when I left fly out of town. When I work for a living. And I opened my briefcase in Ohio and there's a note from Frieda. And I said, that's cool. Man, that fired me up. I was ready to go win some cases, you know, for on our construction project or whatever. Put a note in her purse. If guys wrote a note and put it in your wife's purse, that probably would shock her. And if she could ever find it, Frieda's purse anyway. She might not be able to find it, but cannot believe we took the time to do that. You know, that'd be awesome. So giving time is a really important way of showing caring and appreciation, taking time to do little things like that. Physical expressions can show that, obviously. Kids like to get in bed and snuggle with their parents. Sometimes little kids do. Let that happen. That's a way of showing appreciation and affection for them. Sometimes a pat on the back. If you got three boys like we did and four grandsons like we do, the pats on the back turn into jabs on the arm, or you know, grabbing them and throw them on the ground. They like that. Guys like that. That's a different language. Girls don't like it so much. But a kiss, an arm around the shoulder, things like that. That physical expression means a lot. Good manners, everyday courtesy. That says how much you appreciate somebody. When just good manners, just things we take for granted. And opening the door. Husband and wife, put the toilet seat down, guys. And that shows affection. It really does, you know. And if you don't do it, you'll find out real quick how much affection it did not show. And so just a thought. Just being practical and real. Ask family members to do certain things rather than demanding that they do it. Tone of voice has a lot to do with that. Compliment good behavior. Thank people for their efforts, for the time that they put in. Ask opinions within the family, and then listen to them when you ask them. Don't just ask the opinion and tune them out. Ask them and actually listen to it. And as much as possible, avoid saying anything that's critical or unkind. We all need to have bad things pointed out to us, but the tone of voice, we can say something negative and it not be presented in a negative way. And so we need to, you know, be aware of that. That really would, you know, work really good at church too. There's been a study done on the effect of praise at work. And what they found was that the ratio is 4-1. There needs to be four good things said for every one critical statement that's made. Now, that's not to say that you ignore problems, but you accent the positive, but then you're more likely, when you do say something critical, they're more likely to take it seriously at work. And that 4-1 ratio helps employees feel like that there's a balance at work. 4-1 is not much of a balance, but that's where that one negative statement is so heavy, has so much impact, it takes four of the positives to balance it out. And when there is a 4-1 ratio, employees feel really good about their work, and they feel good about the environment that they work in. The same principle applies to our families. It can apply to church. It can apply to any organization. But we need to make sure that we feed that balance. People do need to hear that they are appreciated in some way. And different people hear it different ways. We'll talk some more about that in just a minute. as I said about my dad, loving and caring families, it involves a lot more than just words. The most appreciated thing, I believe, is loving actions. And even at times when we don't feel especially loving ourselves, if somebody shows us loving actions, or if we make the extra effort to show loving actions, that's critical, absolutely critical to this particular strength. With children, expressions of affection toward children have a lot of benefits. It reduces problem behaviors. It enhances a child's development. This deserves a big duh. But love is the single most important principle of parenting. Duh. But a lot of people forget that. It's so obvious, I think we push it to the side and we just overlook it. The greatest of these is love. All we have to do is go back to 1 Corinthians 13. There it is. You know? If our children do not feel cherished, if they do not feel loved, the other stuff that we do is not going to have a whole lot of impact. They must first feel loved and cherished. Fact is, expressions of kindness increase family life satisfaction. Whether it's a love note or whether it's a pat on the back or whether it's just being kind to somebody. I'm going to ask a question. I'd love to hear your answers, but if you don't, that's okay too. It's primarily for you to think about. But how do you show appreciation in your family, or how does your family show appreciation to each other? What is the most effective way you found? And like I said, you don't have to answer out loud. You can if you want to. That'd be awesome. We might be here a little over time, David, but that's okay. I'll get a sub for the rest of the day. But think about that. Knowing the personalities of the people involved, because the way you show appreciation changes with each person. And that's based on the five love languages that we could spend a whole other period talking about. And Janet? Uh-huh. Yeah. Amen. Mama did the same thing. My mother and Frida's mother felt like all problems could be solved if they cooked a meal. And we sat down and ate. It's all done. Yeah. And I miss that. I miss that. But that is a great way of doing it. A lot of time, a lot of effort. Many ways. Think about that and what works best for you. And then get better at it. We want to strengthen our strengths. Second thing I want to talk about is positive communication. We talked about love languages coming in, or just now coming into this. I want to read a couple of quotes to you. One is, the presence of effective communication patterns is one of the most frequently mentioned characteristics of strong families. Second quote, once a human being has arrived on this earth, communication is the largest single factor toward determining what kinds of relationships he makes with others and what happens to him and the world around him. Communication is critical. Communication is the lifeblood of any relationship. Now, by communication, I mean clear, open, affirming speaking, and consistent, emphatic listening, empathetic listening. We have empathy with the person that's talking. Now, that leads to constructive conflict management and also problem solving, improving our problem solving skills. That's the key to a strong family. Like I said, it should be open and honest. It should be straightforward. Shouldn't be any games being played. Shouldn't be any shadow talk going on, making people guess at what you really mean. And I'm not really good at playing those kind of games. And I just lay it on the table and let's deal with it. Don't make me guess at it, because I usually guess wrong and I'm trying to solve something that doesn't need to be solved. But proper communication is open and honest and straightforward. It's telling other people how you feel. It's learning how to compromise when you know all the facts. And sometimes it's just learning to learning how to agree to disagree. Agree to disagree. There are three styles of communication. We don't have time to go into this today. David asked me to make out a list of resources, and I forgot, David. I stayed too long at church last night, fellowshipping with everybody else. But this is one of my resources that I use a lot. It's Empowering Couples by David Olson. And he also, Dr. Olson has done many studies over many years, and he has a great premarital counseling service that David and I use and many other people use. And Dr. Olson, and it's interesting, the subtitle on this book is Building on Your Strengths. I had never thought about that until last night. But Dr. Olson has a lot of really good things to say about all the facets of marriage. And one of the things he talks about in communication, and this is the first thing he brings up in the book, chapter one is communication. But he's, a person can either be passive in their communication, or they just, you know, they're thinking something, but they won't come out and say it, and for whatever reason. Or they can be aggressive. Aggressive, they're there, they're attacking almost, and they're telling you a whole lot more than you really want to know. Or they can be assertive. The assertive communicator is the most effective communicator. And what happens is, they're not trying to start anything, but they will let you know very quickly, in a nice way, exactly how they feel, but not in a mean-spirited way. And Frida is a very assertive communicator. And I know exactly, you know, what she's thinking. I don't have to play games because she knows I'm not very good at playing games. And I like that. She's not an aggressive communicator. Some people think she's very withdrawn and quiet, and she's not by any means. But she is not an aggressive communicator. She's not a passive communicator. She's an assertive communicator. I love that. And what happens is if you, in a family, in a husband and wife, if you have two passive communicators, yeah, problems. That relationship is devitalized, and both sides lose because they never really know what's going on. And the level of intimacy in a marriage like that is very, very low. You can have a passive communicator married to an aggressive communicator. The relationship is dominating. One person dominates. Who wins? Well, I win and you lose. The first one was lose-lose. This is win-lose. Effective people don't think win-lose. And the level of intimacy is very low. You can have an aggressive person married to an aggressive person. You better strap it on. Because then you have a conflicted relationship. Both sides lose. It's lose-lose. And the level of intimacy is very low. You can have an assertive person married to a passive person, and you have a frustrated relationship, and both sides lose, and there's low intimacy. You can have an assertive person married to an aggressive person, and you have a confrontational relationship, and both sides lose, and there's low intimacy. Or you can have an assertive communicator married to an assertive communicator. You have a vital relationship that's continuing to grow as time goes on. Both sides win in that case, and there is high level of intimacy. Really hope that I'm trying to become a more assertive communicator. I was pretty much a passive communicator, but through the years I've learned to be more assertive there, and I hope that we'll all be aware of those things and try to work within our families to improve that positive communication. Positive communicators are task-oriented problem solvers. They spend a lot of time talking, sometimes just in rambling conversations about nothing, like we have a lot of those when everybody's at the house. We learn a lot of important information. Not talking about anything directly, but you're just kind of sharing stuff about life. You can really learn a lot that way. The most important communication skill, though, is listening. We have one tongue and two ears. That's enough said. Active listening is essential. We've got to listen without trying to create a response. Really listen to what's being said. Try to understand it from the other person's viewpoint. Listening is the greatest compliment you can ever give somebody. Because you just gave them every how many minutes of your life. You just gave it to them totally. And that's the way good listening should be. I told the kids at school, I'm used to not being listened to. Yeah, that's my job. That's what I get paid for. And they're back there on the iPads playing some stupid game. And they're looking at me and nodding and smiling. And I can tell they're playing a game when they start tilting their app. I'm used to that going on. You know, that doesn't bother me. It does bother me. But I can live with it. But if we did that in our families, it would be a disaster. If you're up there preaching and somebody's playing Candy Crush Jelly Saga or whatever the latest version of it is, that's very distracting. It would be very distracting to me. Hopefully we don't have that in our family here at church that's going on. So, strong families are not conflict-free, but with communication, there's a lot of focus on resolving the issues and solving the problems that are there. Without a lot of blaming and without a lot of fault-finding. That's good, assertive communication. Focus on the problem and not on each other. The goal is to hear, to understand, and to accept. That's the goal of listening. Clarify, work it around, move on. Effective communication patterns is the most mentioned characteristics of strong families over and over and over. And strong families communicate assertively, not passively and not aggressively, but assertively. We'll talk about successful management of stress and crisis. This is the last of the six. And guys, this is I have seen more damage done because families were weak in this area, probably than any other single factor in life. Strong families are not immune to stress, and they're not immune to crisis. Life happens. But strong families are not as prone to crisis as troubled families are. Seems like some families are just going from one crisis to another crisis to another crisis. And things happen, and we can't always control that. But a strong family has the ability to deal with the crisis constructively and in a positive way. They can manage both daily stresses, and they can also manage the big, difficult life crisis in a creative and effective manner. They're going to happen. How can we make lemonade out of this lemon, this really bitter lemon that we've got? And it may take time to do it, but you look at it from a positive way. They also know how to prevent trouble before it happens. They can see trouble coming, and rather than letting it just go on to a crisis, they learn to take actions beforehand to avoid that. Some things can't be avoided, but some can be avoided. People that are strong in this area know how to work together to meet those big challenges when they do happen. They see a crisis and a stress as an opportunity to help other family members. And then the others, in turn, help themselves. They've got a strong inner support system there. In the most difficult times, I've known of people that even in times that I cannot imagine going through, they were able to see the positives in that crisis and put their focus on those positives. Not ignoring the other, but their primary focus was on the positives that could come from it. Sometimes in a crisis, a family may learn how much they actually mean to each other. They took everything for granted before, but in this crisis, it turned out to be a blessing in one way because now they know how much they are loved and how much they do love, and that's an important thing. Strong families have good coping skills, and they have effective communication skills. If they don't have good communication skills, it's really going to weaken the strength. If they don't have strong spiritual wellness, if they're not spiritually healthy, they've got a problem when it comes to this. These strengths are interrelated. But families that are successful in managing crisis and showing resiliency, support each other, they're able to unite in the face of a crisis rather than being fragmented by it. It takes a lot of pressure to make a diamond from a piece of coal, but that pressure is applied evenly over a long period of time. You don't take a hammer and just crush it like that and put the pressure on it, all of a sudden it'll crush it. And so it takes, you know, in that when that pressure's on and when there's a crisis, they are united. They're not fragmented. Another thing is a family that's successful in managing stress and crisis are more likely to seek outside help rather than just trying to keep it all in the family. Now, I don't necessarily mean counseling, but maybe church, friends. They reach out to other people to help them. And that's critical. Because sometimes we need that. I mean, that's why we have a church. That's why God created a family. And but families that are good at this are more likely to reach out. Several things that a family needs that really helps them is they need goals. We talked about understanding our purpose before. They need to know what their family goals are long term. They need to know what their values are. What are we absolutely always going to do, and what are we absolutely never going to do? Those values like that, and stick to those values. If those have been clarified, it really helps a lot. They need good problem-solving skills. Some people just, it amazes me, they don't know how to solve problems. And they need a good support network. Don't know how families that are not a part of a properly functioning, loving church, I don't know how they endure some of the things that they endure without that. One thing strong families do is they help the children learn resilient behavior, and that helps those children when they go on, when they do go off to college or go off in the military or leave home, they are much more resilient when life doesn't go as they think it should. Strong families solve their problems by cooperating with each other, not fighting against each other, but cooperating with each other, by creative brainstorming. I love brainstorming. We were taught that in architecture school, so don't go in with a closed mind. Open your mind up and just throw it all on the table and see what sticks. That's a stupid idea. Good, then move on. But at least you talked about it. And brainstorming is necessary. And they use creative brainstorming. And their openness, they're open to other people for that. Let me tell you something. Life's filled with changes. When I was a boy, I just really liked things the way they were when I was about 6 years old. 5 or 6 years old, it just couldn't be any better than it was. And then things started to change. My grandparents got older. No. And we moved to Mobile. No. No. I don't like this change. And but you can't fight change. And there are a lot of common changes that most people face. And if you had the attitude I had when I was 5 or 6 years old, you're not going to do very well in life. You know, you've got to learn how to cope with that and how to deal with those changes. But children get older and they leave home. Adults switch jobs and they retire. Big changes. Families are reshaped by birth, by adoption, by marriage of children, by divorce, by sickness, by death. And everybody in here has been touched by, if not all, then some of those. Sometimes families move to different communities, and relationships are more likely to remain healthy if people can adapt to that change. A family's ability to adapt to stressful and potentially damaging events, as well as to predictable life cycle changes, has been identified as a very important characteristic of families. It involves effective communication, affective involvement, and external resources. Got to have all of those. A family that's going to be cohesive and is going to handle these problems has to have social connectedness within itself, and it also has to have clear definition of roles, especially when it pertains to the power structure. If those roles are not clearly defined before there's a crisis, it's going to be a problem. There's going to be a conflict there. And if they're not connected with outside, socially with outside, with friends and church members, their resources are very limited in learning how to handle that crisis, and they're going to struggle even more. And last 2 days, we've discussed the following characteristics. I'm going to run through these very quickly. We talked about spiritual wellness. There's, you know, sincere hearts. Well, and what I want us to look at is two things. Number one, in the spiritual wellness, and with all of these, there was strength for the future. There was a positive outlook. There's an optimism. There's a power. And there's a commitment that a spiritually well family has. As a result, they're serving other people. They're volunteering in the community. They're helping friends. When we think about the first century church, they certainly had a spiritual wellness in their faith family, didn't they? If we go to Acts 2, we can see these characteristics. They were spiritually well. They were spiritually healthy. They had sincere hearts. They learned from the apostles. They prayed. They worshiped. They served. Our faith family, our physical family, we need to be a lot like that first century church was that we read of in Acts 2. Second thing we talked about was time together. Prioritizing time as families are drifting apart, that quality time is a function of quantity time. Time together is very, very important. Like a date night. A lot of ways that we can spend quality time together. And then I look back at the first century church. They spent a lot of time together. They ate together. They worshiped together. They had all things in common. They fellowshipped. They didn't just have a fellowship meal once a month or once every 3 months or something like that. They spent a lot of time together. One of the biggest problems I see in the church is that we don't spend enough time together so that we really know each other. Commitment. Early church, boy, they were dedicated to the apostles' teachings, and they were dedicated to each other. There was a commitment there, real commitment. We need commitment in our families where we share expectations and set goals. And if we do that, then and we learn that love brought us together, but commitment will keep us together. That love's going to up and down, something like the Dow Jones Industrial Average. But commitment's going to keep us together. Appreciation. At first century church, they were of one mind. They had fellowship with one. They appreciated each other. And I'm sure they expressed their love for each other. Appreciation involves saying I love you in a lot of different ways. Saying it often. Daily would be best, but saying it with actions as well as words. Communications. The first century church, the apostles taught. Church listened. There's a lot of communication back and forth. Again, in fellowship, there's an indication there of communication. We need to learn how to speak love. We need to learn what our mate's love language is so that we can tell them I love you in one language and theirs is another, and it's almost like I'm saying it in French. They don't understand it. But we need to learn what their love language is. Crisis management and resiliency. Good grief, did the first century church have problems? Were they resilient or what? And they were being killed and thrown into prison, and we're talking big stuff here. But they were able to manage that crisis and grow. We need to be able to cope with conflict. We need to be able to cope with big problems when they come along. First century church that we read about in Acts 2, 42 through 47, they showed these characteristics. That faith family was strong. The early church was a strong family. The early church grew unbelievably, exponentially. How strong are our faith families? As leaders of different congregations, we need to be aware of what makes families strong. We need to be aware of how we can go about growing on what are our strong points and how can we grow those strong points. Every family has strengths. And an individual and a family's greatest opportunity for fulfillment, for growth, and for success lies in identifying our strong point, developing those strong points even greater, and applying the key strengths that we talked about today. They're all interrelated. We need to be aware of them. We need to work for them. Good things don't just happen. They take a lot of time. I want to thank you for listening today. Hopefully there's been some communication. I want to thank you for being committed to being here every day. I want to thank you for expressing your support and appreciation. And I've really enjoyed the time we spent together. And I hope y'all grew in faith. I did in making the preparation. Thank you very much.